Mr. Stevens, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, great. We had some technical difficulties, but I think we're on track now. How are you today?
Good. I'm doing great today.
Good. Well, I'm glad to have on the show a close friend and the chairman of MAGA. I believe now it's been, 17 years? It's a record, right?
Oh, yes, it's a record, absolutely, but I followed in the footsteps of one of the greatest leaders of all time.
So take us back a little bit when you started. And, you know, what amazes me about not only you, Chairman, but your entire family, Cher, Brandon, you know, Ernie III, your mom, your dad, you've all been involved in helping your people. And it's an extraordinary thing. Take me back 17 years ago when you first started. Where was Ernie back then? What was going on around him?
Well, you know, I was still raising kids, and I had two kids just getting ready for college and three in high school, and I was still working with in my community and working nationally with young people and elders, and you know, I was well into my career, probably around 40-ish, and you know, just trying to do what my leadership, my mentors, my teachers have taught me, to be active and to be hardworking and to do the best I possibly can to move Indian country forward. You know, I told you that I remember the night that I broke the record, and it was in the beginning of my ninth year. And after I got sworn in, I said to the crowd and Rick Hill, the former chairman that I followed, was in the crowd. And I said, it's hard to believe I'm here, but I am now 10 minutes longer in serving than Rick Hill. And that's just, to me, one of the greatest honors of my life. And that was 6 years ago. Rick also served as tribal chairman since then and previous to that. So Rick is an amazing guy and has done so many great things. But what happened with my influence, going back even further than what you asked me to, I was a young councilman like my boy, and the tribal leaders from throughout the country, they were satisfied with the work with the National Congress of American Indians, but they wanted a stronger presence in Washington, D.C. So those tribal leaders called on Rick Hill to go and establish that presence. Well, guess what? He's the chairman of our tribe. So he had to make a choice, and he chose to step down. And his vice chair lady was Debbie Thundercloud, who is now the chief of staff at the National Indian Gaming Association. She ran for and won his seat. And I came in the same time as a freshman councilman elected by my community. And it's the first thing Rick came to me. He said, "We need your help. We need to establish a presence of gaming in Washington, D.C. We need to stand by our rights to engage in tribal government gaming. And we're going to strengthen what currently existed in the National Indian Gaming Association." Now, I can go even another step back, Tino. I hope I don't confuse you, because I might even confuse myself.
No, not at all.
If I step back even further, that it was my Uncle Percy, Bill Houle, Stan Jones, and a whole bunch of other folks, you know, Blue Dog, Jerry Hill, Mark Paulus, I could go on forever, Sharon House. But when they went back into the establishment, when we won the Cabazon-Morongo decision in the Supreme Court, that was an amazing victory for Indian tribes. But yet, big gaming industry and other folks did not want us to expand the way we were headed, but we had won that right. Tribal government gaming was winning the battle and moving forward. And one of the things that one of the myths that they created was that as soon as we started to game, which we already were by that time, but it was recognized by the Supreme Court, as they started to establish what's called the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, there was a lot of concern that people were creating myths before we even started to build, that there was going to be, you know, organized crime and corruption and bad things happening, you know. And NIGA, those old school leaders, got out in front of that. and established NIGA to protect, to educate, to promote, to prepare everything that we needed to do. That's what NIGA was established to do way back then. So I kind of jumped all the way back, and if you want me to jump back to 2001, when I was elected to serve in my first year, I was about 41 years old, somewhere in there, and again, with five children, all an important place in their life, but I have an amazing wife and Cheryl that was right by my side, and you know, we did this. We went out and did this, and we always wanted to. I was really kind of when I came into tribal council in 93, I immediately came under the tutelage of Rick Hill, but I'd always been under his tutelage because when I was a roughneck kid coming from the city back to Oneida, Rick was the director of the Boys and Girls Club in Oneida, so I was kind of immediately under his tutelage. So here I am, you know, umpteen years later, now I, again, under his tutelage, understanding the national world around us, you know, because then by the time Uncle Percy's retired, and a lot of these elders are starting to slow down a little bit and enjoy all the years they put into this world, and they told Rick to do the job. So Rick told us, you know, there's several of us on the council, I won't go down the list for you, but Debbie Thundercloud, NIGA's chief of staff, was the chair lady, but I was the kind of principal guy they trusted to go out there and support Rick. And we did a lot of things nationally, and I was just, you know, I'm a kid in my mid-30s then, only because I turned 58 yesterday. So, but what we did thank you, sir. What we did is we tried to try to get the world to understand that we are complementary to NCAI, that we're going to do the same kind of government things, but our vision was going to be on tribal government gaming, and that we continue to work. And if you look back or you look forward, you know, I've worked with every NCAI president from the mid 90s forward, you know, and my father was NCAI first vice president like I was in the mid 90s. Prior to my NIGA job, so we've got a couple of generations here that we're working in advocacy. But in this particular case, it was my need to help Rick because, well, Rick was kind of you know, in any country, you don't really always have a choice. You know, you hear about elections and lobbying and appointments, but the tribal leaders, they told Rick that he needed to do this, you know. So I, as a councilman, we always try to raise money. We try to raise the awareness of what NIGA would do specifically for protecting not just tribal government gaming, but sovereignty as a whole. That's important. So as I was getting ready to say is that I've worked with all these NCAI folks. So we were never like an option to NCAI. We were always working together, always, to this very day. But as a matter of fact, while I was helping Rick as he grew NIGA's presence in Washington, I grew in my work and was elected as the first vice president of the National Congress of America as a sitting councilman back in the 90s. So I still worked parallel, and I understood the dynamics that, you know, NCAI was a very important and lead organization. But NIGA was specific, and we could always count on them to get our work done. And later on, now I've chaired the gaming subcommittee at the National Congress of American Indians for the last 16 years, and I have not missed any NCAI meeting in the last 23 or 4 years since 1993. I've made every single NCAI mid-year, winter executive session, and annual. Yeah, and so, but that's, you know, that's what my parents taught me to work ethic, and so, but taking us back, I don't know, I'm taking you all over the place, but in that time when I came into that place, I thought maybe 2 to 4 years. I'd like to think that I could have lasted a little bit longer, but I think that what I found out is that this is what I'm meant to do, and I'm the kind of guy that. I'm not here to a lot of folks think I'm chasing the photographers and because I get all these pictures. A lot of folks think that I gotta I'm always in the realm here, but I think that there's two things that are important here. One is sometimes when you work hard and you're visible and people like you, communities, kids, families, they like me because I work hard. Then you get into pictures now and again. But I think mostly they like me because I'm always ready to go. I'm always ready to work. And I don't think I've unpacked my suitcase other than to change it out when it breaks every few months. But I really have.
Oh, I know. You're on the road. Yeah. I mean, I see you, and I'm on the road. You're on the road 20, 30 times more than me. You're at every single event supporting your people, and the same with your whole family. I mean, I see what you're out there all the time, too.
Yeah, I try to get her to go when I can. She's a home girl. She likes home. She's born and raised on this reservation, never left here except for to follow me, and both of us go to college, but... But she loves home, and we have 15 grandchildren, and they just count on her. They love her so much. But every now and then, I hijack her and take her with me. But you know, she trusts me. She stood by me, and she's really made a man out of me over the years. If that makes any sense, because she's just a pillar.
Oh yeah,
she's
I can relate to that.
What's
yeah,
that?
She's an extraordinary woman.
Oh yeah,
I can relate
to
that. What you just said, she's made a man out of me. I can relate to that. I mean, a man is judged by two things: his work and his wife, right? I mean, the woman that he's with. So that's she's an extraordinary woman, just an extraordinary. But so from what I can hear, those were really defining times going to the next level, being represented in a strong way in D.C. after all those struggles and hard work with all those people you mentioned, and Rick Hill and your uncle and your dad. It kind of like you just took off with that. With the whole team, right? I mean, it went to a different level in those 17 years.
Yeah, and I think that's what we learned. I learned that from my uncles and my teachers and my mentors here in town, here in Oneida and eventually throughout Indian country, that you know, a lot of folks think that you know, I showed up one day and got to be this just because my dad was or my uncle was. You know, I had to work from scratch, you know, and I had to take it from scratch because I had my own struggles as a young man. And, you know, well, dad, mom and dad always try to find a way for you that you have to kind of learn the hard way, too. So it takes a little while. But as I established a family, I knew I had to be a stronger person and get my education and work hard. But I think, you know, all that stuff about, you know, whether I'm in all the picture or whatever I do, I'm blessed with that. I'm blessed that, you know, the biggest blessing is getting invited to community. And that happens all the time.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing. I didn't wake up doing this. I did this. I came to this place because I followed the leadership, and that's what those mentors and my parents have taught me, that you follow the leadership. The leadership will guide you, and I think that the consortium or the consensus or bringing the folks together, whether it's a subcommittee meeting or a full-blown NIGA executive board meeting, those folks are ones that give the direction. They're the ones that run this shop, and if they elect me after the two-year session, then I might get a little more credit than I deserve. But I'm appointed to be the chairman. I'm elected to be the chairman and chief spokesperson. But I do nothing without their blessing. I do nothing without their input. This isn't about me. This is about the executive board of the National Indian Gaming Association. They give me my direction. They give me my my marching orders. And we can't do it without the staff. And I won't go down the list of staff folks, but I would tell you that the National Indian Gaming Association has and continues to have a great staff that work hard every single day. And we're not always perfect. We don't always figure it out. But I tell you what, we got a good pulse on the lawyers and lobbyists in D.C. who work for the tribal governments and been around this game. You know, some been around for a very, very long time. And we're a team. We pull our team together. We don't always agree, but we try to find consensus. But again, it's the tribal leadership that run the National Indian Gaming Association. They make those decisions, and I fall in. And unfortunately for me, I'm blessed with a lot of visibility because of that. But it's not something I pursue. I listen to the leaders. That's my job, and that's why I was taught.
Yeah. You're just amazing the amount of work that goes into everything that's done, and you're there when it matters, and that's an extraordinary thing. Let's go back a little bit, because you and I have always smoked cigars together and talked about your dad. Your dad was an extraordinary man. He worked. I know where you get this from. I mean, he worked tirelessly for for Native Nations, and he just received an award, right? The Leon Grant Award.
Yeah.
Which you
yeah.
went to.
Well,
tell us
you.
A little bit about that, and then a little bit about him and how it influenced your life.
Okay, and if I lose my train of thoughts, you know, bring me back to the ones that raised me. That's
absolutely.
That's
yeah, no
my
worries.
My
no
grandma and my mother. But my parents are divorced, so there was a rough road ahead for me. But I learned from it, and both of my parents they did the best they could to get
sure.
through that. My dad remarried the love of his life, who we lost my first year at NIGA. My stepmother, she's mm-hmm. a beautiful person. She was Oglala, and she was really an icon, like Cheryl, because, you know, she just supported and stood by her husband, my father. My father did similar things that I did, only on the part of the United States government and inner city centers. And so the Leon Grant Award is named after an amazing activist leader in Phoenix that helped establish the Indian Center. And again, in those eras, were what they were doing is all of this Native people and family were going to the city at the urging of the United States government, but the government wasn't holding their end of the bargain. They were just trying to send them to the city to find opportunity. What they were was finding struggle, taking them from their culture,
right.
taking them from their community. So when they did that, people had to step up, and Leon Grant was one of the most notable in Indian history to step up and take charge and help families. And so the correlation to my father is my father did that in Los Angeles. He was the executive director of the L.A. Indian Center, and they trying to find jobs, find food, find opportunity, find apartments, all that stuff. That's what all these guys did. So what I said, just to sum that up, Tino, because I could talk forever about the great Leon Grant and my dad.
Sure.
But what I said when I
sure.
accepted the award for them is we could talk a long time about these men, and they were beautiful men. But let's talk about who's the next Leon Grant. Who's the next Ernie Stevens?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Let's empower our young people to be able to have the
yeah.
kind of impact that these two men have. And I have that on my shoulders, and I have it on my shoulders to be able to blend and help young people understand their responsibility, what they have to do. So rather than to get too focused on what those guys did,
sure.
I said, who's the next Leon Grant? Who's the next Ernie Sr.? And that's what we'll continue to try to build.
Yeah, it's a really amazing thing. So let's talk about that. I mean, you parlayed right into that perfectly. That was pretty well my next question. What are we talking about in terms of the next generation? What like you said, who's the next Ernie Stevens Jr.? What do the young generation need to do to follow in the footsteps or improve for the rest of the generation? What are we looking at here?
Well, it's harder for our young people because there's so many options and so many things to do. And because of what the elders did to protect us, to provide for us, to bring us where we are today, there's a little more challenge out there. And there's so many more opportunities that it's not selfish to go off and try to be an entrepreneur or go off and try to create a world for an opportunity for yourself. But at the same time, what we're hoping people do, once they figure that out, they take a step back and start hiring people who don't have those opportunities and start looking to others. And that's where we kind of that mentorship thing that we have to try to hand down. So I think it's important that the young people, again, stay focused on a clean life and stay focused on hard working and work ethics like my father and Leon and so many other folks. We could go down the list forever about that. Worked hard. And remember, those folks didn't have any cell phones. They rarely had a secretary. You know, they didn't have any emails or Snapchat or all this stuff that's out there now. But you know what? I think the classic thing, and I can't speak for Mr. Grant, but I can speak for my father, that if the plumbing went out at the L.A. Indian Center, they have no money for a plumber. Dad got a book and got under the sink and fixed it. You know, if the typewriter didn't fix it, yeah, the manual typewriter, you know, what do? You fix it. So it doesn't always work out good, you know, but at the same time, we have to appreciate what they had was very little, and we got to put our minds, our nose to the grindstone, and work as hard as we possibly can. And that's what we constantly try to teach our young folks. And young folks are smart. You know, young folks are coming up strong with a good quality education. Gaming has helped that, but most importantly, our elders are the one that help us to get there. And, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today without those elders in our community, not just holding me to a higher standard, but helping me and mentoring me. So that's my job now. You know, I'm pushing 60, and I've done my best, and I'm going to work harder at it. And, you know, I've got five adult children in my household, and 15 grandchildren are there at different times. And again, I've worked not just in my own community, but nationally with the National Congress of American Indians and other groups. I want to see these young people thrive, and I want them to. They have so many more options than our elders had. They can do so much more, but it still boils down to the main thing. The main thing is a hard work and strong ethics. Those are the things that are going to get our young people to the next level. And we got a great future ahead of us, in spite of what challenges there may be. We have a great future ahead of us in Indian country.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what you said. You know, back then, they didn't have the money to hire plumbers. They didn't have the money to hire anybody. They had to do everything grassroots as a community.
Absolutely. Absolutely, sir.
There was no options, right?
No, I mean, your options is go to the city or hunker down and try to create some opportunity. And then, you know, in those days, I'm not one to draw down on the R word and racism and things like that, but there was a lot of obstacles out there. You know, even myself, you know, I just wanted a job. I didn't want to go to school, you know. I just wanted to go do grunt work and make some money. But, you know, I couldn't find a job pumping gas or washing cars or washing windows, none of that stuff. So I had to go to college, you know. And now because of 251 tribal governments operating 480 gaming facilities in 28 states, we generate into a $30 billion industry. And so when you consider that with the ancillary offshoot income, it's over $33 billion. Okay, guess what? We're doing the hiring now. Guess what? We're putting people to work, and I do that without a chip on my shoulder because I'm proud. I'm proud that in our world, in Indian gaming world, there's over almost 700,000 jobs. Both if you directly, it's about 330,000, and then there's still another 300 plus jobs out there created by Indian gaming or directly in Indian gaming, and we're hiring people. So we've gone past that world of conservative viewpoints of Native people. Native people are embracing the world and not looking back. And for the ones who still stay in that function of conservativeness or looking at us different or having that kind of that angry mentality about tribes, well, some of them are still flat-out racist, but the numbers are fewer now. The problem is, and that's part of our job at NICA, some of them don't understand, and then they get confused when they get in the wrong circles, and they think that, well, the Minions have been through so much, they just gave them a casino over there. You know, they don't understand the true aspects of tribal government gaming, our treaty rights and our rights to govern in our own communities. They have no concept. That's my job. And a lot of our congressmen and senators know that, but still, there's so many being elected every 2 years and every 4 years and 6 years that that's our job to hit the front line and tell them what Indian country is about, and tell them what we're doing, and tell them it's good things, and let them know what we're doing for their communities. Because, as you know, we've been through some of the darkest economic times over the last, you know, 6, 8, 10 years. And in those times, we've kept our gaming, our dollars, and the things that we contribute to states and the people around us and school system. We've kept emergency aid for people to in employment. We've kept teachers and healthcare workers in employment because of the money that we turn in the community and the money we contribute. So, you know, I'm not sure what those numbers are just off the top of my head, but, you know, $100 million in charitable contributions every year by tribe, you know, that's just by
that's
tribes.
Amazing.
That's just, yeah.
That's
so
incredible.
During that Great Recession, we prevented layoffs and helped the most vital people stay at work. And we're very proud of that. We don't have a chip on our shoulder. And anybody that is conservative or looks negative upon us in this day, well, we pass them by. We have no time. We don't even look back. We just keep moving forward. And we fight against that with education and understanding and hiring people and being in a higher place.
Yeah, and all that money goes straight back into the community to build them stronger, more education, you know, for employment. It's just amazing. It's an amazing thing because most businesses are not like that. They're more commercial businesses, right? Here you're building all sorts of things.
You know, we pay over $3.4 billion in payments. We don't pay taxes. We make payments. The same kind of same thing some ways, and on a principal basis, maybe not. But we pay. And I learned that really young when I first got in this. We were establishing municipal agreements around this area, and my father told me that, you know, don't be angry because you're fresh out of college and you think you understand the law and all that stuff. Well, if you want the policeman to come by your shop, guess what? He's got to get paid. So we get it, sit down, and my father actually negotiated the first agreement with the local municipality that provided services to our casino. And so that, and of course, you know, we pay taxes in several categories, $1.5 billion in revenue sharing agreements. We all personally pay federal taxes and Social Security and Medicare taxes. We all pay those. And so to get to so many people get off to the myth of India's not paying taxes. That's just, you know, Indian governments don't know more than state governments do. But we as individuals, we pay a ton of taxes. And you know, when I was in college and drawing on federal student loans and, you know, had to get some government aid and got medical assistance from the state to get through college because I had children, you know, I always knew I'd pay it back, and I paid it back over and over again. And I'm proud of that because what I'm paying back, I'm helping other people who were in the same boat as I was going through college and trying to grow up and not being able to find a job. Those kind of programs are for the poorest of the poor. That's who I was then, and now I'm helping them. So it's a big difference. It's a complete turn. But like I said, I won't tell you how poor I was, but I know I have five little kids, and always me and my wife are always willing to work as hard as we could, but it wasn't until coming back to our community that we were able to get our careers rolling. But we've been there and we've done that, and our lives are not without struggle just because we've been working so hard and have good jobs now and getting our kids through college and these beautiful grandchildren. It's that way because of what our elders taught us. Work hard no matter what your obstacles, keep moving forward. That's what we're doing in our community personally, and that's what we're doing in Indian Gaming. No matter what the challenge is, we're moving forward.
It's a great thing. It's a great thing. Ernie, talk a little bit about education. You said something, you were trying to find a job and you couldn't. And this is something, because I know a lot of the tribes, they fund education for their people. And talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that's kind of like the path. And I think that we can't, got to keep stressing it as much as possible. Tell us a little bit about, couldn't find a job and you went to school, and how that fundamentally changed the direction that you went into and why.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that's a credit to the teachers out there, you know, and they don't make a lot of money. The teachers, whether they're college professors or in our school systems, you know, they have decent benefits and a good steady paycheck, but they don't make a lot of money. But they're the ones that changed. They're the ones that helped me to focus on what I needed to do. And it's that world that changed my life around. And then with my wife's encouragement, and I didn't know this until I got to college, but my wife's a pretty smart lady. So when you're married to your tutor and she helps you through, and sometimes it's a little bit of a burden for her because she had to do her own schoolwork too. But being married to a brilliant lady was very helpful. I think that kind of comes back to what we have to do in Washington. Is we have to provide an education, whether it's as chairman or chief spokesperson. I end up kind of coordinating with the lobbyists and coordinating with the tribal leaders and coordinating with the government officials and things. But education is really the key here. And again, I didn't have any education. I didn't go to school much. I thought I'd just go to work and, you know, save the world. But it didn't work that way because you can't really get the job you need. I couldn't get any job, much less, you know, a quality job when I have no education. But now with a good education, with a lot of experience, you know, we're doing a lot of things to help people. And again, I take that back to the teachers. The teachers are really the folks that help to make the world turn. And I'm not just my teachers. Again, the teachers don't make a lot of money, but they make a lot of champions out of people. And whatever I've done in my life is about family and the educators in my world, and that's what I do. I'm an educator by trade. That's what I do. I educate the United States of America about what Indian country does and what they stand for and what tribal government gave and does for the community. We're not buying any yachts and boats and things like that. Well, some of us are if we can save up and work hard, but this money that we get goes right into the quality of our education. And we have one of the most beautiful schools in the whole world. It's built in the shape of a turtle, and all five of my children have come through that system. And when gaming sports start taking off here, I was a part of a team that broke ground over there. But my dad was a development director and the guy that was the point man on that. And they built that school and they built the casino simultaneous. And those two have done a lot of great things for us. We continue to thrive, but not without challenge. The economy and the world around us, we got to keep working. No, nothing's easy. But again, it all comes back to work ethic.
Yes, of course. Let me ask you, looking ahead, what do you think are the toughest challenges that you see coming up, you know, in the future? What should Native Nations and just people look out for in the future?
Well, I think that some of the toughest challenges is there's a conservative element out there now that seem to think like maybe they're in the majority, and that's not really the case here. There's some loud voices centered around
that.
Now,
when you say conservative element, what do you explain that a little bit? Because some of our listeners might not know.
Well, let me try this because I work in a nonpartisan or a bipartisan world, so I don't say sure. I don't want to beat up on Republicans. And certainly not the President of the United States of America. But that new era, which we are happy to work with, we are currently working with, and we are very respectful with, but some minority folks come out of that era think it's a different kind of message and don't understand the message. So we get to these folks that are strong-willed in some of the viewpoints, and that's just a little bit of a bump in the road. The real priority is understanding the Trump administration because, for the most part, they want to talk to us about, you know, creating less obstacles for business and wanting to empower tribes to get into business. Unfortunately, they don't all understand the tribal government status, and so we have to educate them about our treaty rights and our rights as governments. And once you understand that, then we understand how we can get to not just empowering our tribal enterprise, but empowering tribal business. And yes, we want to work through regulations, but under no circumstances are we willing to sacrifice our right as tribal governments. That's not an option here. So we had a little bit of struggle in trying to articulate that to folks around us, but we're moving forward. And it's a little bit of a struggle in that we really are hoping to try to be able to get them to understand the necessity for us to work with government and move forward. And it's hard because we have different administration, different political party in there, but there was a lot of great things done under the Obama administration. And we're hoping that we can try to educate people to understand that you got to stay with some of that. You can't just break away and start over just because they're different parties. Because prior to Obama, there was a good energy in Clinton, but one of the best administrations in history of Indian policy was the Nixon administration, who was a Republican. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, you mentioned my father, that's who worked.
That's right.
And bringing forward the era of Indian self-determination, that's a giant step forward that later became another giant step in self-governance. But without those eras, we would be really behind the times. So we got to stay strong and continue to ride in that kind of energy. But we have to help these new folks in this new administration understand it's not that simple. And as far as when it comes to tribal sovereignty and tribal governments, our status as governments will never change. We were governments, and we did economic development and agreements with folks around us long before there was a United States Constitution, and we're going to continue to do that. But, again, we continue to be proactive and respectful. But, again, we can't afford to lose some of the things that were done way back in the Nixon administration, and this last administration did good things with Indian country, And we don't want to tell Obama to Mr. Trump, President Trump, about the Obama administration, but we want to talk about the strengths of the things that were built in the era and try to ride those into a new understanding as President Trump works. He has no choice. There's treaties and agreements that the president has to work with us, and we're seeing some movement there. But the problem there, Tino, is that you know, there's no assistant secretary, and there's not a lot of appointments, and there's talk about budget cuts and things like that. And so those are the things, and then talk about deregulation. We have to educate them. Well, we understand that now. It's a different world. So
yeah.
So we really need to continue to work with the new administration, help to maintain those strengths that were brought forward in that era. But we don't want to make it about a partisan or anything like that. We just want it to be what's best for Indian country, which is a nonpartisan world that we live in, and we have to work with both parties. I've done that for my entire career.
Yeah, and like you said, there's been some amazing things done by both parties, not just, like you said, back in the Nixon era, that was Quantum Leap, right?
Yes, sir.
So administration here, administration there, it really just keep focused on what the goal is and just work with what you have. And, you know, I heard you do a speech, which was really incredible, and you just talked about how we still got to work hard, we still got to keep focused. It doesn't matter who's in office. It's just we got to stay on our game and not let, you know, not say, oh, well, you know, this and that. You know, you were very, very on point on that, which is true, because there's been a lot of things done. You know, it's after so many years
yeah.
that have been incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
all
again,
right,
we got to
go
work with both parties. That's the way we do it. Some of the best, you know, there's a lot. There's a predominant, you know, world of Democrats in Indian country, but there's some strong Republicans. And tell you what, some of the most most experienced, going all the way back to the Nixon administration, some of the best leaders, even in today, come out of the Republican Party. So we work with all the leaders in this country. We'll do a good job and do it in a respectful, nonpartisan way. And, you know, that's our challenge, and we're up for the challenge. We've learned a lot. I learned from my daddy that you work hard and you be respectful no matter what the party.
Great. Let's go to some questions. Hang on one sec. Hello, hello, GT Radio. How are you tonight? Hello, can you hear us? A little bit of a delay. Hello, hello. Okay.
Hey, Tino,
hello.
It's Arlene.
Hello,
can
hello.
You hear me?
Hi,
Tino,
Arlene.
It's Arlene. Can you hear me?
I got...
I'm good.
Yeah,
how are you?
I can hear you. Can you? Good. I have a chairman here. Do you have a question for him?
I do. I wanted to ask what he sees as the biggest challenge for Indian gaming in the next 10 years.
You know, I think that the biggest challenge, something we've talked about throughout the show today, is education, is helping folks understand who we are, where we come from, and what we need to do. I think that, you know, you got a lot of things out there, like, you know, the sports betting, you got the internet gaming, you got local communities, and then you got this new energy out there that they don't all understand what tribal government gaming is, and most importantly, what tribal sovereignty is. So it still comes back to education, but no matter where we move in this world as it relates to whether it's sports betting or internet or economic development through with and beyond gaming, the biggest thing is going to be education, helping folks to understand who we are, what we do, and that we're tribal governments. We're not individual business persons, and we're hoping that at that level, Indian businesses can take a giant step forward. But for right now, tribal government gaming is not always understood in the best way. And whatever moves forward in this United States of America, we want to be the first ones moving forward with it. But again, people sometimes think that that the dealing with tribal sovereign governments is an option, and they have options. It's not an option. Our governments are recognized in the United States Constitution and by the United States of America. And again, we were governments before there was a United States government, so we're willing to work with anybody. But I think the biggest key is helping the world continue to understand what tribal government gaming is and what our rights of all tribes as it relates to sovereignty as a whole with and beyond gaming.
Does that answer your question, Arlene?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thanks, Arlene. Yes,
thank you so much. Thank you. All right, let's go to the next one. Hello, welcome to GT Radio. Are you there? Hello. Well, I guess they're not there. Okay, let's try the next one. Hang on one sec. Next one here. Hello. GT Radio. Can you hear us?
Hey there.
Hello. Hey, how are you?
Do you have a question for Charlie?
Hello? Looks like we lost them. Okay, let's try something else. Hello, it's GT Radio. Can you hear us? Hello,
can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
How are you? Did you have a question for Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Chairman, what do you see as the next? I know Indian gaming has been very centric to the community. What's the next step as far as diversification for the community, and how do you see that in developing in the future?
I really try to stay focused on gaming. I think that energy is a key component that is moving forward in so many ways now. I think that some of the different elements of the internet are going to play key roles, whether it's business online or whether it's gaming online. I think those are going to be key components of where we go from here. I think it's important to, as we go forward, is to try to focus on creating jobs for folks in and around the Indian community. So, again, I think that I really don't have a real crystal ball to understand that, but I think that energy and economic development with gaming and beyond gaming, hopefully there's some more opportunities there. But we always try to keep our feelers out to try to see where we go from here. But we got a lot of brilliant young minds out there that are coordinated with some of our more experienced leadership. And tell you what, my grandmother got her college degree when she was 69 years old. She was the only one with a degree. Now pretty much all of our family either in the process of getting their education or getting ready to get it. All of my children have their college degrees, and my youngest is studying for a PhD at the University of Kansas. So I think it's really important that as we move forward and try to analyze where our economic ideas come from and where we're going to go from here, it has to go beyond gaming. We've been gaming again since before there was a United States of America, and we're going to game for a long time. But I think it's important that we appreciate that there has to be other ways that we can generate income, and I don't really have the answer to that, but we're going to continue to move forward. We have a couple of committees that are working with that. We're working with the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development. We're working with a lot of different groups to try to bring that message to Indian country. How do we get our economies continuing to move forward? That again, we're always relying on gaming because that's our right, but we got to try to expand it so we can, because there's a lot of tribes that don't do gaming that can do other kinds of economic opportunities. So that's a big question, sir, and it's heavy on our mind. And again, we're going to continue to work with those national organizations to try to move those initiatives forward.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Let's try another one here. Hello. Welcome to GT Radio. Are you there? Can you hear us?
Hey, Chairman Early.
Hello,
Chairman Ernie.
Yes, sir.
Go. Chairman's here. Yeah, go. Question. Hello? Are you there?
Yes, hello, I'm here.
Yeah, do you have a question for Chairman?
Yeah, Chairman Ernie. If a tribe doesn't have its gaming license, what's a way that they can, you know, capitalize on the gaming business? Or is there another way of economically, you know, tying into it?
Well, you know, I think that where the online world starts to evolve, I think those are key thoughts and ideas. But I think that it's important to try to, again, we have our national center, NCIED, that has our RES conferences throughout the year. There's different kinds of thoughts and ideas. But again, that's kind of what we talked about earlier, is that we want to create an opportunity to evaluate how we can get beyond, not beyond leaving gaming behind, but going forward with business and economic development ideas. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have right now is trying to create opportunities for tribes that don't have the gaming market, don't have the gaming compact, or for some other reason. So it's a big subject on our agenda going forward. And I wish I had the answers, but I will never rest in my job until we can create other opportunities, and whether they're with gaming or without, different types of economic development, because some just don't have the market, some don't have the opportunities, some have some challenges in negotiating with their states. But we need to create opportunities to. When I was young, my dad said, you got to start someplace, and sometimes it's just about having a job. And if we could create more jobs in Indian country, I think that's a step forward. But I'm hoping that the online world and the internet world and other types of business-related possibilities will create a better tomorrow for all these tribes and not just the gaming tribes.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you. So, Chairman, you've had quite the week. Cher celebrated her birthday, and then you had the Oneida powwow, right? And then you had your birthday, and as I hear, you're not going to be hanging out and partying. You're off to the races, right? I mean, you're hitting DC, right?
Yeah, we'll get back on the road early next week, but I've been able to stay close to home. And when I stay close to home, that means you just hang out in the satellite office or hang out in the community. We also have a big election here this weekend. So, you know, while I'm on vacation, I'll come in and take a call or come in and get my work done. But I might be out there, you know, shaking hands and saying hello to folks out there and just seeing how that goes. So the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin has an election this weekend. So we've got that going on. But pretty much this is, you know, with the powwow and the birthday and all these grandkids and family, you get to enjoy that. And that's, you know, what my life's about, you know. So this is kind of get about a week to 10 days where we could just kind of shut down and stay close to home. Again, we don't go far from work, and the chief of staff here at Debbie Thundercloud keeps us hopping here. So we're still working. But just to be honest, there's not a lot of stretches in this whole year that I get a 10 days here in Oneida. So it's really a blessing. It's really a fun time being because it's our birthdays. And, you know, it's hot, you know, but it's not super hot. It might be one of the nicest places in the whole world to be around this time. And plus, we're getting ready. Our skies are starting to work out. The Green Bay Packers are going to be back in town soon.
We're
probably going to. Yeah. So it's a beautiful, beautiful time of the year for us and for me, because I could get 10 days home. But then we'll hit the ground running, and we'll keep working, and we'll work on the road all the way through. Even though Congress is not in session in August, it gives us time to catch up and get to visit people and get some work done. So we'll keep moving. I really won't slow down until Christmas again after this break. So for me, it's a good break. But, you know, I got in this thing to do what I'm supposed to do, and whatever the tribal leaders want me to do, then I get moving. And the folks, you know, a lot of times they ask me to come to their community. I do my best to work it on my calendar. Calendar gets tight, but where I can make it, that's really God's blessing in this job. I'm proud that I can talk to senators and congressmen, congresswomen, and administration, and heck, I even get a picture with a president now and again. But the biggest thing is the voice we provide to the president. That's our message. So there's so many blessings out there, and you know, the real blessing is that you know, it's just like my mother and my stepmother. You know, they really had to play the roles of being the warriors in their families, you know. And so my wife, she does the same thing. You know, they have to play dual roles and handle the shop. My wife is always done a great job. And, you know, my grandkids, they come and give me a hug and say, "Where's grandma?" So grandma's kind of their preferred person anyway. But so life is good. And I gotta do what I have to do. But there's no better blessing in this world when you can sit in a ceremony or in a tribal center or in a community, and those folks want you to be there, and they want me to come for different reasons. And again, that's the blessing. And sometimes it takes me away from home a little too much, but I could go down a list. I'll give you one example, Tino, is I was sitting in my office in a hot summer on a Thursday, and I said, "Call the folks over at Taos Pueblo and say, I know you're celebrating the return of Blue Lake, but I only get home on weekends, so I'll come on Thursday, and then I have to keep moving. I apologize." 2 minutes later, my secretary came in and said, "The governor from Taos is on the phone." I said, "Who's got the phone? Who's on the phone late in the afternoon? How do you reach a governor, you know?" So I that was my luck on that day. So I had to pick up the phone, and the governor said, "Well, Chairman Stevens, this is a unique celebration, and the Blue Lake was a return of what was a sacred and beautiful property that belonged to Taos Pueblo, and they worked so hard to do that and to get that back." And the governor told me, the governor is like the chairman of their tribe at Taos. He's called the governor.
Sure.
And he said, "Ernie, your father had a lot to do with helping us get this back, and
wow,
we'd really like you to come on Saturday." So, okay, well, what do you say? You know,
yeah,
the governor asks you to come on Saturday, you come on Saturday. So I worked my way up, and after a week's work, then I head up to Taos Pueblo. And I go up to Taos Pueblo, and my dad always said that he had connections with the White House, and there was one guy named Brad Patterson who was there, who was his one of his connections to the Nixon White House. But the biggest thing is they recognized me for how far I came on a Saturday, and the one lady said, "This is only really for community members, but I'm going to give you one. It's a little manila envelope." So I opened it up, and I looked, and there was the governor of the Taos and the chief of Taos sitting next to Richard Nixon signing this return to Blue Lake. And then I looked throughout the crowd. It was a black and white picture. And there was this 40-something-year-old Ernie Stevens Sr. sitting in the crowd at this picture.
Wow.
And I was like, that was my reward for listening to the
governor. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Community on Saturday.
What a story.
Yeah, so I'm full of stories. That's one of my special ones because, like I said, the governor doesn't pick up the phone and tell me to come there on Saturday. I wouldn't have came there, but it was one of my rewards in my career and my life.
Yeah, what a legacy. That's really incredible. Chairman, we won't take up any more of your time. We know you're a busy man, and you got a pretty busy week coming up ahead of you. Will you come back on the show sometime? I'd love to have you on again.
Yeah, Tino, got one more quick story?
Sure. As many as you want,
okay.
Chairman. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, remember now, I will tell you just a nutshell about my mother was an activist. Remember, my parents were divorced.
Oh, yes.
So I
yes.
got it, so mom was an activist. And then she went from activism to cultural and education. She helped start the Indian Community School in Milwaukee. And she came back to our community. And my mother had her share of struggles as it relates to alcohol and her young era. So she shifted her mode to helping the same people that had the same challenges. She spent 30 years now calling drug abuse prevention. And then she's retired, she says. All that means is she lives on a limited retired income and continues to help the community. So my mother is the one that raised me, along with my grandmother, who passed away 4 years ago. And grandma was an icon, and she helped us. She was always by our side, and she waited tables and then went back to college in her 60s and got her degree when she was 69. And then she taught school
wow.
at the Oneida School here till she was about 93 years old. And then she helped write a dictionary. Then she helped to digitize it, still almost 100 working on this kind of thing. And again, passed away at 103 years ago, 103 years old, 103, 4 years ago. But again, that's a nutshell of two of the folks that raised me. But I'll close, Tino, with this. If you guys ever want to read about my story, it's not my book, but it's a book written called The Bingo Queens of Oneida, How Two Moms Started Tribal Gaming in Wisconsin. It's written by Mike Heft.
Mm-hmm.
If you call my office, I could get you a book, or if you want to go online,
you
can probably find this book. But what it says in this book, there's a lot of stuff in here, but these two ladies had a rebel-rousing teenager there that despised all these cars coming to play bingo in our brand-new gym here, and I couldn't play basketball, or I couldn't do my boxing practice or nothing because all the tables were up. So my Uncle Percy, late Uncle Percy, who was the first vice chairman of NIGA back when they first started NIGA, he was our chairman, and they were when I get too out of control, they'd have to go tell Uncle Percy on me. So before they did that, they sat me down. And they said, we know you want to come and play, but when you move those tables, those bingo tables are there for the convenience of our customers. And our customers are coming to create an opportunity to make money for our tribe so we can help with the bills. And when you move all those tables, then we have to move them back. And then you're not being respectful of our customers. And it was one of the first bingo halls in the United States of America. But they said, just try to understand this. They said, when those people that come here and play bingo, that when they play bingo, then we can pay the light bill and we can buy you uniforms for your basketball team, or we can turn the lights on all on the baseball diamond. And if we don't play bingo, we can't do that. So the story's in there. It's a little more direct how these ladies kind of like, before we go tell your uncle on you, try to understand that bingo turns the lights on and bingo keeps our community move forward. Where we've come from them to $30 billion industry, these two ladies are my heroes. They're Elma Webster and Sandra Ninham. I saw Sandra at the restaurant today. These are America's heroes, these two ladies. The Bingo Queens of Oneida.
The Bingo Queens of Oneida. Got to read it. Wow, what a story. So the light went on when they told you that, right?
Literally, the light went on because they shut the lights off. I couldn't play basketball yet. And I wanted to be the champion. So I got a college education because I like basketball. And, I won a few state Golden Glove championships. I won the National Indian Heavyweight Boxing Championship.
A lot of people don't know that. You're a very accomplished boxer, too, right?
Yeah, I like to fight. My wife told me several years ago that my boxing career was over. I like to box, but it's what I do now is I'm always fighting for what's right and fighting for my people, fighting for young people, and fighting for America. When I pray for all of America, pray for this whole world, because we got to get this right. And the few people that don't understand Indian gaming or tribal governments, well, they're always going to be that way. We'll try to pick a few off at a time, but for the most part, again, when you have 700,000 jobs, America understands you, because about half of those are going to non-Indian. So we're doing real good, and we won't get wrapped up in the minority, because the majority of our folks, they support an industry that has a $30 billion impact and that has 600,000+ jobs. We're all on the same team, and we're in this together. The benefits of our industry doesn't stop at the reservation boundaries. America keeps thriving because of tribal government gaming. We'll keep moving forward. We're excited about that, Tino.
Great. Ernie, thanks so much for being on the show. I want to have you back. Thanks for being a good friend. And thanks for everything that your family's done for Native Nations. It's been an incredible interview. And for anybody who's listening out there, next week we will send out the transcript and also an audio file of the interview. So if you missed it, or you want to reread it or listen to certain sections, you can do that. Ernie, thanks so much, and you have a great day. Give my best to your family.
And thank you all for what you do for Indian gaming.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Bye-bye.